time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Well, like a bad penny that keeps turning up, the mask mandates are returning to San Diego. They never stopped in hospitals or doctor's offices. They did stop for a while in restaurants and cafes and churches, although I was wondering if I'd ever live to see the day. But they did stop. The last places to hold out were our public schools, but they're coming back. In fact, that's where this begins. I'm reading from La Jolla Light. San Diego County's increasingly high level of COVID-19 coronavirus transmission has prompted the San Diego Unified School District to bring back an indoor mask mandate starting Monday, July 18th. So this is a few days old. This has already started. Masks have been optional in San Diego Unified since April 4th. Wow. They made it from April 4th to July 18th without masks. Continuing to read, the renewed mandate will last at least 2 weeks. Yeah, sure. It'll only be 2 weeks. Sure it will. Now I'll tell one. The renewed mandate will last at least 2 weeks and will affect students and staff in summer school programs, according to the district. In May, San Diego Unified set multiple criteria that, if met, would trigger a return to a mask mandate. One of those criteria was if San Diego County entered a high level of COVID-19 activity as determined by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. How come they weren't doing this for the flu every year? Well, I shouldn't ask that. I'll give them ideas. Let me continue reading. As of July 14th, an increasing number of COVID-related hospitalizations has pushed the county past that threshold. San Diego County currently is at 11.5 hospitalizations per 100,000 residents. All right, now we have learned, and they have admitted, that COVID-related could mean anything. Somebody could be in the hospital for a completely different reason, but they'll always test you now for COVID, and if they test for COVID, they write it up as COVID-related. So I don't know which is which. I'm just saying they've admitted to doing this. Continuing to read the news report, when a county has a high community transmission level, the CDC recommends that people wear masks while in public, indoors, including at schools. Starting July 18th, everywhere at San Diego Unified Schools and district offices will have to wear a mask indoors, the district announced in an email to families the evening of July 15th. We will continue to monitor the COVID-19 community level according to the CDC and county data, and we will communicate if there are any changes in 2 weeks, the email stated. State officials have not announced any renewed statewide mask mandate. Well, we are living in California, so just hold on to your seats. I sure am getting sick of all this. This has been going on for 2.5 years. 2.5 years. And I know COVID can be deadly for some people. I have a good friend who died from COVID. I had COVID myself and recovered. So I do take COVID seriously. I also take other facts seriously, such as the fact that with the exception of senior citizens, COVID often means nothing more than flu or cold symptoms, sometimes no symptoms at all. I also take it seriously when our politicians corporations exploit a crisis. Just watch and wait and see how serious of a new COVID variant will come out right around, late October, early November, when Democrats will once again encourage mail-in balloting for the sake of our safety, of course. And in some cases, even when people don't mean to exploit, they just don't think this stuff through. When places require masks despite people having been vaccinated, that tells you how effective they truly think the vaccine is. On the other hand, when hospitals won't let you come in if you haven't been vaccinated, but you are wearing a mask, that tells you how effective they think the mask is. So why are these things being mandated if they're ineffective? And then there is the lack of consistency. My wife, who is currently seeing many doctors because of breast cancer, likes to have me with her in these meetings for moral support. Neither of us have been vaccinated. I am still allowed to go in with her at some places. I am not allowed to go in with her at other places. And in all places, they know she hasn't been vaccinated, but they let her in. Thankfully, she's the patient. I'm very grateful for that. But it does speak to the lack of consistency. Without consistency of practice, we are forced to believe there is no uniform conclusion. Follow the science, we keep hearing. Follow the science. You ask a question. No. Follow the science. I'm immunized in a natural way. Isn't that better? They'll look at you like a deer in the headlights, especially if you're talking to somebody at a hospital. They're not allowed to respond. Follow the science. Follow the science. This from the same political party that can no longer run for office unless they're willing to say men can give birth, and they are going to lecture the rest of us on following the science. Now, at the moment, this is only a recommendation, but you've seen how it works. What's a recommendation today becomes a mandate tomorrow. But meanwhile, it's already a mandate for the San Diego Unified School District. It's already been a mandate in military installations in San Diego. And Comic-Con returning to San Diego this year. Everybody at Comic-Con will have to wear a mask. Call me a romantic. Don't those dudes at Comic-Con dress up in costumes and masks and superhero suits anyway? Is that really going to make a difference to them? My friends, we need to push back. Let me give you an example of a pushback that I'm giving. For many years now, I have been teaching a weekly Bible study on Friday afternoons at a retirement community. I've been doing this since back in the year 2010. Now, I should say, and this is pretty obvious, retirement communities are amongst the places where lives really were in danger from COVID and still could be. So my study switched to Zoom right away back in 2020. It has remained on Zoom, however, for the past 2.5 years. Everyone in the retirement community has been vaccinated. I have not. That shouldn't be an issue. If you've been vaccinated, supposedly you're protected from me, even if I haven't been vaccinated. Anyway, when the possibility came up for me to return and teach in person, which the men and women there are very anxious for me to do. Zoom can only accomplish so much. Well, I was given a choice. I could get the vaccine and provide proof of vaccination once a week, or I could get tested for COVID once a week. That was my choice. And I told them straight out, this I will not do. I have had COVID. I have recovered. I have a natural immunity. I'm probably the safest person that can walk through your gates. Even so, the whole community has been vaccinated. I will not go out and get a test once a week. I find that cumbersome. I will not live that way. Now, look, I want to be fair. I'm not saying there are never situations where I wouldn't be willing to get tested. I'm just saying we should not be rolling over and going along with this so easily. If the Zoom stopped working, for instance, am I going to abandon a bunch of senior citizens and not go out and teach a Bible study for them? No, probably not. Probably at that time, I would bite the bullet and take that stupid, idiotic test once a week. As Sean Connery taught us, never say never again. And of course, if a loved one of mine was in the hospital and the only way I could even visit them was to take the test, I would take the test. So as you see, we can only go so far with this. My point, when we can, where we can, take a stand. Hey, I like that. It sounds like a slogan. When we can, where we can, take a stand. Or I guarantee you 10 to 20 years from now, we're still going to be listening to the CDC with their mask recommendations. In the meantime, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Going to offer a review for an older classic television series, The Waltons. Some people think of it as corny. Those are probably the ones who never actually watched it. Now, why review something from the past, you're probably wondering? That's a good question, and I have a good answer. With some notable exceptions, television and movies were better years ago. They just were. Somebody has to say it. It may as well be me. But again, I did say there are notable exceptions, so you don't have to write me and say, what about The Chosen or anything like that, okay? Still, there is another reason for going back. The Waltons is not trapped in the past. It can still be enjoyed in the present. It's on the MeTV network, otherwise known as Television Heaven for the 50s through 80s. Or you can get the series on DVD. The program is worth watching and still holds up. In fact, it was always a period piece anyway. It's technically an historical drama about a family living in the woods of the Virginia mountains during the Great Depression in the show's first few seasons and World War II in the latter seasons. These mountains, incidentally, are not filmed in Virginia, but rather Southern California. In fact, you can look at that landmark hill with the Hollywood sign. Well, the other side of that big hill is Walton's Mountain. It might have been nice to see real Virginia countryside filmed. The show was such a hit, you'd think they'd had the budget for that. But it's okay. It's okay. The Waltons was still wonderful and semi-autobiographical. It was created by Earl Hamner, based on his 1961 book Spencer's Mountain, which later became a film in 1963, depicting his own family life while he grew up. Later on, Hamner became quite involved with television and wrote a script for the television movie The Homecoming, a Christmas story also based on his family. This was broadcast on CBS December 19th, 1971. Because of its success, CBS greenlighted The Waltons. The show ran for 9 seasons on CBS, once a week, and seasons, you need to understand, were much longer in those days, about 26 episodes per season. The Waltons ran from September 1972 to April 1981. After that, over a period of several years, there were 6 television reunion movies. The show starred Richard Thomas as John Boy. Even if you never watched the show, you're probably familiar with the name John Boy. That's become part of the routine. Good night, John Boy. Good night, Mary Ellen. Good night, Jason. But he did star as John Boy, the oldest of 7 brothers and sisters, and this character was based on Hamner himself. Other stars include Ralph White as the dad, Michael Learned as the mother, Ellen Corby and Will Gear as the grandparents, and a whole host of other characters, in as much as the Waltons were a large family connected to a well-knitted community. These additional characters in the community are eccentric and colorful and a lot of fun, from Ike and Corabeth Godsey at the local store to the Baldwin sisters. These women are absolutely delightful, known for the whiskey they sell, not even knowing that they're selling illegal moonshine. They call it Papa's recipe. I just loved the Baldwin sisters. You will get quite a kick out of them. Now, if you've listened to any of my other film and television reviews, you know I am extremely critical. I must confess, the industry has become so woke and PC that for me personally, the bar has been lowered. These days, just knowing that two men are not going to be making out on the screen, or knowing that two women are not going to be making out on the screen with each other, is enough for me to like it. So watching an older program embedded with family values is quite refreshing. In fact, I'm grateful they still allow it to air. Who knows how much longer that will be with the whole cancel culture. There were actually a lot of episodes of The Waltons that spoke out against the discrimination going on back in the 1930s, but that will not be considered enough by today's wiser heads. So who knows how much longer you'll even be able to see it. There was a new pilot made for a new Walton series. They showed the pilot on TV. I don't know if it's going to sell or not. I didn't care for it at all. Remakes are never a good idea anyway, but of course these days I just shudder to think of what they might do to the show should it become a new revamped weekly series. Will it still have family values? Well, yeah, they'll call them family values. But will they be the kind of family values that embrace abortion, socialism, open borders? And how many major characters will need to come out of the closet? Sorry, my mind is wandering. Anyway, I will limit today's review to the original series rather than speculating on a new one. The original series did have family values, but I don't want you to think that was my only reason for liking the show. Over the years, there have been many programs with good family values that were still poorly made just as far as art goes. My enthusiasm for the Waltons is genuine in its own right. Right, just in terms of my honest critic's microscope on acting, writing, and interesting stories, the show wins in all categories and was actually awarded over the years with Emmys in addition to the very prestigious Peabody Award. Warm, charming, humorous, and true to life, it gave us an excellent slice of Americana. Even though we were watching it in the 70s and 80s, the show, once again, was set during the Depression era of the 1930s and slowly moved over the years into the breakout of war in Europe and America's eventual entry into the war. This was followed by the post-World War II era. You really feel like you're living in those days. As a viewer, you look at the world the way early 20th century Americans looked at the world. It is so important to have this connection and continuity with our past, especially in an era when history is being rewritten, particularly American history. The program is narrated by the real John Boy Walton, whose name has been changed to Walton and is in fact the before-mentioned writer Earl Hamner. Speaking of writers, that is what I personally enjoyed the most about the Waltons. It starred a young man who wanted more than anything to become a professional writer. I was in college myself when the show went on the air with that same desire, so I related and actually felt thrilled when John Boy, after 5 seasons of hoping and longing and dreaming, finally sold his first novel to a publisher. Now, this doesn't mean I don't have criticism of the Waltons. I do. One downside to a successful program staying on the air for many seasons is that changes are unavoidable. Sometimes the changes are handled well, sometimes not so well. Changes take place for a lot of reasons. Some actors want to move on and do films, although that seldom turns out successfully for them. Other actors who would have stayed with the series die. They pass away. People such as Will Gear, after playing the grandfather for 6 seasons. He was wonderful in that role, by the way. And while Ellen Corby didn't die while the show was on the air, she did have a stroke. So they wrote into the storyline a stroke for Grandma Walton. This was handled with taste and delicacy and dignity. It was done in a very moving way. But let me talk for a moment about the actors who chose to move on. Richard Thomas was the first to go after 5 seasons. He did come back as a semi-regular in 2 episodes of season 6 and was later replaced by another actor in season 8. Nobody likes to see a character role assumed by another actor, but I will say this. The new actor, Robert Whiteman, did look and act a lot like Richard Thomas. Not entirely. We always know when it's a different actor, but the height and build and hair color were the same. The face was similar at least. Most importantly of all, the actor talked just like the original. In time, I really did start thinking of this guy as the same John Boy. Unfortunately, he has not been much liked by the fans to this day. You can go to websites and they'll say things like, "Everybody knows Richard Thomas is the real John Boy." Okay, look, I would have preferred to see Richard Thomas stay in the role as well. Once again, none of us like it when actors from our favorite programs move on. And sometimes it is better to just not feature that character anymore, which is what they did for a couple of years with John Boy. However, keeping in mind that we all know this is fiction and that all characters are portrayed by actors, if you're going to replace somebody, at least do it with somebody who looks as much like the other actor as possible and who plays the part in a very similar way. Whiteman did this, but he had an impossible task, taking over the role of an iconic character. Nothing he did would have satisfied anyone, and that's too bad. He did the best he could with an impossible task, a very tall order, and at least the producers got a similar-looking person. That is seldom done when new actors take over. There's a few other examples. One time that comes to my mind is the new Darren on Bewitched. He looked a lot like the old Darren. But examples of characters looking and acting absolutely nothing like the original would be the two new actors replacing the actors for Tim Allen's daughters in Last Man Standing. Michael Learned as Olivia Walton also left the series, although she came back for a while and then left again. Whereas John Boy's premise for leaving was natural, he's a kid who's growing up, he's publishing his first novel, wanting to move to New York, he's eventually getting a military job with the Stars and the Stripes in World War II, the premise was much more awkward with Olivia Walton. Supposedly, she came down with tuberculosis. Now, I don't know much about that or how contagious it was in those days, but its being contagious was never mentioned. What they said instead is that she needed to stay in a sanatorium because she would have been too much of a burden to stay at home and have her family take care of her. Would have been unfair to tax all their time. My friends, there was nothing, absolutely nothing about this family that made us think for a second that caring for their mother would have ever been a burden. It was just an excuse to explain why an actress was no longer being seen. Ralph White, as Dad, eventually left the series too, claiming he was going out to the Arizona sanatorium with Olivia to be with her, to keep an eye on her. But he did remain for a long time. He and Michael Learned and Richard Thomas all returned for the reunion movies, incidentally. On the other hand, sometimes a series will change because a realistic growth of the characters calls for a change. This is legitimate change. This is artistic change. Such was the case when spunky older sister Mary Ellen, played by Judy Norton Taylor, married an even spunkier person, Dr. Kurt Willard, played by Tom Bauer. Kurt was a great character and added a lot to the series. Unfortunately, this actor also quit when they wouldn't pay him all the new money he was demanding, so they decided to have him killed off during the attack on Pearl Harbor, where he was working as an army doctor. I did not like seeing him die, but the episode was done in a very gut-wrenching, emotional, and powerful way. This leads to what should be a rule for any series. If you're going to kill off a character, for Pete's sakes, keep him dead. None of us ever buy it when you say he was really alive. I hate this device. I hate it when they come back a few years later and say, "Hey, you know what? He didn't really die after all." Isn't that a hoot? During season 9, when the Waltons was getting anemic and starting to slip in the ratings, a newer team of writers decided to shake things up. It's true that the series needed to be shaken up by this point, but they did it by claiming Kurt actually survived Pearl Harbor and was hiding out in Florida, having tricked everybody, embarrassed to come home to Mary Ellen because his injuries were such that he could never perform sexually again. I hate this Hollywood device, and it's done often. Remember Dallas? Actor Patrick Duffy decided to quit, so they killed him off. One season later, when he discovered, big surprise, that he wasn't really going to have much of a career without Dallas, he decided to return. Instead of saying, "Hey, dude, you quit, you're out, the story has gone on," they decided instead they had to bring him back. An entire season of episodes was explained as only having been a dream. A dream! Dallas was never that good of a show anyway, but it did have a loyal following. What a way to betray the fans! The fans of the Waltons also felt betrayed. The return of Kurt is discussed to this day over the internet as the absolute worst episode ever, and I completely agree. When Mary Ellen discovered Kurt, he was played by a different actor. At least in the case of John Boy, they got an actor that looked a lot like him and acted a lot like him. There was nothing about this new actor for Kurt or his spoken dialogue that even remotely reminded us of the real Kurt. Besides, the premise completely contradicted the backstory. The Army only reports people dead if they know they're dead. If there's doubt, they're called missing in action. On the show, Kurt was reported dead and awarded the Purple Heart. The family would have wanted to see the body anyway, although it is Pearl Harbor. Maybe they couldn't have seen it, but he was reported dead, given the Purple Heart, other medals of gallantry for saving lives right after the bombing before he died himself. There was a whole episode when a character visited the Waltons and explained the heroic things Kurt had done after the bombing. This man saved my life. This man was my inspiration. Then he eventually died. But in the new version, he was just knocked unconscious in civilian clothes after the bombing, waking up months later in a hospital, not even knowing who he was at first. So how and when did he earn all those medals after the bombing? It was all utter nonsense, an illegitimate story, a shameless attempt to boost ratings. Oh, sure, occasionally this stupid device works a little better. Star Trek killed off Spock in The Wrath of Khan and brought him back in The Search for Spock, but they had a plausible story. Spock passed on his consciousness to Dr. McCoy. The Genesis effect regenerated his body back to life. It's a lot easier to do that in science fiction. But even then, art was not the reason Spock was killed, and art was not the reason Spock was returned. The reason they killed him off is that Leonard Nimoy decided The Wrath of Khan would be his last film. And The Wrath of Khan became such a hit, Nimoy changed his mind and wanted to do another film. Now they had to find a way to bring him back. But whatever the latter writers of the Waltons did to louse things up toward the end, I still must pay homage to the original writers who gave us a program as dramatic as it is entertaining and as heartwarming as it is humorous. At the moment, it's still legal to watch the Waltons. Check it out. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Listen to this customer review of Bob Siegel's novel, Choice of the Lorelei. I saw this play on which the story is based many years ago. Elements of it have stayed with me over the years as it expanded my imagination about how things might have been in ancient times. It was also very exciting to see this story intersecting with the other works by the author. Very different stories, yet linked by a common element. I can hardly wait for more. Choice of the Lorelei, available in ebook or print copies from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined tonight by my producer, Brendan Thomas. How are you today, Brendan?
I'm doing fantastic, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. I do want to pay homage to another regular on our show, Jim Barrier. He has COVID. Mm-hmm. And as I said in my opening monologue, we do take the disease very seriously. We believe it's been exploited. We believe there's all kinds of stupid mandates, but that doesn't mean I want to see anybody get it. I've had it myself. It's not a lot of fun. Jim is over 70, so he's in a higher risk category. When I spoke to him yesterday, he was doing much better than he had the previous days. I do want to say that I paid special homage to him that the audience may not catch. He hates the musical Cats.
Oh, does he?
And it's not my, I don't think it's a great musical either, but I do love that one song, Memory, by Andrew Lloyd Webber. Beautiful music. And I remember one time I played that when Jim was on the show. He just went on and on. So Jim, as a special homage to you, I played Memories tonight, knowing that you wouldn't be here to have to listen to it. So that was my gift to you.
Oh, thank you, Jim, for that. And I personally like Andrew Lloyd Webber's music. Personally.
Oh, well, I think beautiful, beautiful music.
He comes up with some really catchy melodies. And again, I personally love the musical Cats. I think it's really, I don't like the movie. I know you liked the movie, if I remember right.
I liked the movie better than the stage play, but I didn't really care that much for either one, I must say.
Okay, yeah. Well, I like the stage play a little bit more, but that's another
but
story.
But that song, Memory, beautiful, beautiful song.
Has to be the top 10 best musical
songs. Yeah, it's one of my favorite songs, even if it's not my favorite musical that it came from.
There you go, yeah. So I wanted to take a break from the whole Christian films list because it's been one busy week of news, hasn't it?
It certainly has.
So I'm just going to go through a whole list of them. And then if we have time, I do have a quick movie review if you want to at the end.
Sure.
But so we'll start off with going back to your monologue from earlier about COVID. There was a study done that showed the prevalence of how long symptoms can affect with COVID, and they found that 5 to 10% of children underneath the age of 13 had those long symptoms. So going along with what you were talking about with the San Diego Unified School District mandating those masks, it makes really no sense for those students because A, it's not affecting their health in the long run too. And it says here that 33% of 14 and older had longer COVID symptoms than those kids too. So in the end, like I said, or like you were saying, it's not going to affect the kids as much, but it is affecting those people 65 and older. So I have to agree with you, this whole mask mandate for San Diego Unified, especially being the only public school system right now in the county of San Diego, is implementing these masks still.
So, at the moment, yeah. At the moment, let's hope it remains only them.
Yeah, I know. I'm still predicting that we will not have masks upcoming to this. That's my early prediction. I could be totally wrong.
I hope you're right. Yeah. I certainly hope you're right.
Yeah. Another serious story, though, is the fire out in Yosemite. The latest.
Yeah, and I did not hear about that till yesterday. And I have been to Yosemite. It's breathtaking country.
Bet. My mom left to go to a hiking trip with my aunts and uncle up there on Thursday. Then on Friday, that's when I started hearing about the fire. So I called to check up on her, and it went immediately to voicemail. So that made me think, oh, this is the
worst. Made you really nervous
for sure. And I try calling her on Saturday, no answer, and then she calls me on this morning and she says, oh, I'm perfectly safe. I'm in Pasadena.
Very glad, happy for you.
Story goes, the fire started on Friday, so the fire actually went over to a cell phone tower, and so it completely messed up any cell phone reception in that area. Saturday, it takes forever to get the traffic out to go to Pasadena from there. And so she was just tired at the end and she went to go to sleep. And then she woke up this morning to let me know that she is safe. But here's what so far we've had for information for the Yosemite fire. 14,000 acres are burning and there's 0% containment so far.
It's just horrible. Such a waste, such beauty.
Yes. And according to my mom, the smoke was the worst she's ever had to deal with in an area before. So our hearts and prayers go out to the thousands that live out there. I'm going to transition this news story into a really funny one.
Oh, before you transition, has the governor blamed the fire on global warming yet?
You know what? Surprisingly enough, not yet. But
just wait. If not him, somebody else. But
separate news story, though, I heard this morning on NPR. There's been a huge increase in shark attacks going around the coastline here.
Oh, well,
in
then
America.
That's because of global warming.
Correct.
Of
that's
course.
What they're saying.
Of course.
I'm like, what? I've never heard why. And especially during Shark Week, I'm not surprised.
And right? Then when we have an exceptionally cold winter, oh, who said anything about global warming? It's climate change. I always said it was climate change.
There's no consistency
of
in that.
Of course not.
So going into the funny story, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg or Buttigieg, maybe. I don't know. It's a weird name.
I know. Yeah. He was getting questioned. Specifically, the whole meeting was supposed to be about the current infrastructure that's going on in America, whether it be here in California about the electricity issue that's been going on or how the infrastructure bill is holding up so far in America.
Is this the one where he talked about roads being racist?
I don't know about that. All I remember, but the best part of this whole thing, and I hope more people go out and watch this video. It's only 3 minutes long, so it does not take you long to find it. It is amazing. Republican House of Representative Texas Troy Nels. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. NEHLS Nels. He was questioning Biden and whether we should implement the 25th Amendment on him, which states whether there's a death or we find that if he's incapacitated to actually try to run for or be our president, then we should be able to impeach him or let him go as president. So he used different examples for this. He said that he used speeches so if you could describe America in one word, what would you say? Our Secretary of Transportation, I'm just going to say Pete for now because his last name is kind of complicated. Pete replies with, a home. He goes, oh, okay. So I want you to take a look at this big poster. And I'm not kidding you. He printed out a huge poster and said, I want you to read what Biden said to this question. And it says, I would describe America in one word. Just a whole bunch of mumble mess.
Buttigieg literally said that?
No, he did not. He says, I don't read transcripts. And I'm like, oh, that's a terrible answer. And he goes, well,
so who did this thing with the picture? Was this a satire that was done
somewhere?
So.
Yeah, I think so.
Sounds like some satire on YouTube.
I think Troy legitimately went to the Office Depot across the street and bought a huge poster. But that's not the only picture, but I'll get there in a second. He said, so is it true that during the presidency of Trump that you said these words, if our presidency is not in good shape, then our country is in not a good shape? And of course, the Secretary of Transportation, Pete, said, yes, that is true, but that's a separate thing. But that's not the point. The fact that Biden is our president and he's definitely not in good shape, I would say. So if by
that's
his.
That's got to be the understatement of 12 centuries.
Right? If his quote is to be made, then obviously our country is not in good shape if that's the case.
Oh, yeah. He was saying that about Trump. I mean,
here's. The one thing I will say that all of the things that the Texas House of Representative Troy Nell said, he's mentioned that dishonesty from the mainstream media is our greatest threat to our society today. I don't totally agree with that. I believe terrorism or terrorists specifically.
But the way they embolden and enable terrorists can contribute to that threat.
I can understand that. But that's just a small little nitpick thing out of all the things he
said. Well, there's a lot of great dangers, but I certainly don't think they're helping our society.
No. But that's, just, again, small nitpick. What Troy is trying to say overall, I absolutely agree with 100%. He brings out multiple other pictures to show that Biden's is not in a good shape to run for president. He brings out a photo of Biden sleeping during a speech.
was he sleeping during a speech he was giving himself?
No. I believe it was.
I could see him putting himself to sleep.
Actually, even better. I think it was a speech that was given by the New York representative. There's another photo of him shaking hands to a ghost next to him during a North Carolina A&T speech he was giving to. And I was like, I remember that one. And then lastly, he also showed a picture of during an Easter celebration at the White House. He went up to handshake. There was a guy in an Easter bunny outfit performing.
Right.
He just got up randomly to shake his hand and the Easter bunny walked him back to his seat. out of all these things, they said, so is it true that you talked with other representatives within the cabinets that he's not a fit president right now mentally? And his first response goes, well, first off, I want to say I'm glad I have a president who can ride a bike, which no, he cannot. Wasn't there like,
putting aside the fact that he can't ride a bike? What if he could?
Not
Who
even
cares
that.
Cares whether your president can ride a bike?
Not only that, isn't there at that point where 2 weeks ago, and I this is a serious story, he actually did fall off a bike trying
yes,
to get.
Yes, he
off.
Did. Yeah, that's my point. He can't ride a bike anyway. But even he could have been the best bicyclist in the country. Who cares? That's not what we're paying him to do as president.
Agreed. So Troy then tries to interrupt. He's like, "Answer the question. Did you have a conversation?" And before he can even answer, Nancy Pelosi has to butt in and say, "All right, I'm going to cut off both mics. This is not a necessary question to the actual topic at hand."
Especially since it's not making us Democrats look good.
Exactly. So if you could find that 3-minute clip, highly, highly recommend it. It was amazing. I want to share it as many friends as I can. It's really, really well
yeah,
done.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it's worth the watch.
You know, it is, because, again, it's just pointing out the fact that Biden isn't a really good president right now in his shape. But the issue
I think he's easily the worst president we have ever had.
I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. We hasn't called this a civil war yet, so I'm on that opinion, but he's getting up there as one of the worst. His I don't know if you've seen his ratings. They're tanking. Like
they were 33%, even according to the liberal New York Times about a week
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. And even mainstream media is already going against him already. Yeah. Every single story.
The only problem is they know they're going to get Kamala Harris if he steps down. So they're not real happy about that either.
That's my point too. I wouldn't want to implement the 25th Amendment if Kamala Harris is my next best option.
Oh my gosh. Otis and Giggles, the president and the vice president. President.
Yeah. Moving on, our governor's back in the news. Are you surprised?
Of course he's back in the news.
Here's his quote from this week. This is about UCLA specifically, but USC is also doing this. Their football program is going to be leaving a conference called the Pac-12, which encapsulates most of the colleges that are along the Pacific coastline. USC and UCLA are looking to move to the Big Ten, which is a huge conglomerate in the Midwest. So Michigan, Ohio, Nebraska. So those students are going to have to travel all the way across the country constantly to play different sports games. Now, this is not supposed to be implemented till 2024, and the deal hasn't even finalized yet. But here's Gavin Newsom's quote on this. And keep in mind, we have other issues right now. We got COVID issues. We have small businesses still going out right now. But his big issue right now is UCLA specifically. Here's his quote. "The first duty of every public university is to the people, especially students. UCLA must clearly explain to the public how this deal will improve the experience of all of its student athletes. It will honor its century-old partnership with UC Berkeley and will preserve the histories, rivalries, and traditions that enrich our communities." Now, inside the CBS report and the Los Angeles Times, it shows that there's no political reason why he's mentioning this whole thing. The only thing they can think of why Gavin Newsom wants this explained is for money reasons, specifically. This poses an issue for UCLA down the line in regards to state funding and allocation of resources. Another possibility would require UCLA to share some of its TV revenue with the California government. And then lastly, the reason why this is a big money thing, too, is UCLA is actually going to, it's predicted that they'll double their media rights payout if they transition to this college. So that's millions of dollars going to them right
there.
Aside
from the fact that he doesn't like it, I just don't see how this is any of Governor Newsom's business.
I agreed. Again, we have gas issues, inflation, and don't give me that load of stuff about, oh, it's about the students and oh, we have to. They are getting.
I'm just doing this for the American people.
And then what about all these NIL deals? These students are getting millions, thousands of dollars. So they'll be just fine financially to go across the country with all these sponsorships, scholarships, everything. And it's all getting paid for them already. So I don't get what's your big issue if UCLA and USC want to go to a different conference. It's not an issue to me. And I don't think it should be an issue to you, Gavin Newsom. So again, mind your own business, Gavin. Just move on.
Yeah, I wish he'd really move on and stay out of all of our business.
Unfortunately, he's not. He's going to be running for president. I was going to mention that.
Oh, yeah, he will. Oh, yeah, he'll be running for president.
This is not good. This is not good. Moving on, One American Network has just lost its last television
partnership. Now they were already taken off the cable provider that I have, mm-hmm. And now they just don't exist at all as an entity?
On television specifically. They still stream online, and they still have a deal with, I think, Pluto TV still has their channel.
And what was the stated reason that they're responsible for violence and disunity in our country?
Was that what you read?
No,
I just read that Verizon said that they didn't have enough customers watching the program to begin with, which
that's
I don't.
A bunch of baloney.
Yeah.
That is a bunch of baloney.
Literally,
unfortunately, news networks like Fox have started compromising the last few years. One American News Networks is one of the few places I could go to hear the truth.
I tell you, yeah. If you hear the viewership quality of all the conservative networks, they put Fox News on that list as the number one, but we'll ignore that one.
I was actually a guest twice on OAN. My resume is shrinking when I'm a guest on something popular and now it doesn't exist anymore.
It's online, so it counts, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a trip down memory lane, at least.
Is Newsmax still on TV? I think it is.
I think it is. My cable provider never had Newsmax anyway, so
I heard that one
is good, too. From what I understood, OAN compromised even less than Newsmax
did. No, exactly, yeah. Like, if you look at how hard right that One American Network is, it's really there. And I think also what even helped too, that show Last Week Tonight did a whole segment of the show. So it was bombarding and saying like, oh, it's a terrible network. But I think that's free publicity for you personally if you get that.
So and they were headquartered right here in San Diego too, which that's was right. really cool.
I think Newsmax is also headquartered in San Diego
too. That's cool. I had not heard. That's interesting.
I have to look that up again, but I'm pretty sure. So I think this is bad in terms of television audiences are pretty much older generation, so they won't get the news that they want to hear, and they'll have to compromise, like you said, to Fox News possibly. And if they
and Fox have News has some good people and some good stuff, but like they wouldn't even mention Dinesh D'Souza's movie about the election fraud.
Nope.
Wouldn't even mention it.
Yep.
Let alone they're entitled to their opinion about it. They can want to come up and say they didn't like it. That's fine. But to not even mention it.
He's been a guest on Fox News for how long? How many times
years
has he been on
and
there?
Years
exactly.
And years.
So now you're not going to promote him? It
and they
make
pulled
sense.
The plug on all discussion of the election. Even Sean Hannity went dark after about a month into that thing.
Yeah. Moving on. Study shows that due to the inflation rates right now, dollar stores have increased their sales. I am not surprised by that story in a little bit. 13.2 increase in the second quarter of 2022. The inflation rates are at 9.1%, which is the highest since 1981. Now keep in mind, Reagan was president at the time, but he was not responsible for how the economy was. He actually improved the economy immensely. That's why we have the term Reaganomics. And so I want people to, because I've seen so many mainstream media say, oh, at least it's not as bad as Reagan's presidency. No. You need context behind that
kind
of story.
We did great financially under Reagan. We did great financially under Trump. It's only under the Democrats that we come to ruin.
Exactly. The context about Reagan was the president at the time. Ignore that. You have to have context. It was the previous president's fault, right. Not Reagan's fault.
Well, the one right before Reagan was Carter.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was one that we took a real nosedive as well.
That's right. Last story I wanted to get out before we head out tonight. Car warranty robocalls are coming to an end, says the FCC. How much do I believe that? On a scale of 1 to 10? Probably a 1.
I can't stand them, especially since it's companies that I don't have any warranty with that always give me the robocalls telling me my warranty is up.
I knew my warranty was up about 70,000 miles ago. What did you mean?
But sometimes places you don't even have a warranty with will call you anyway. It's just...
Yeah, so what the...
It's a scam, a lot of it.
But here's what's going on. The FCC says, file a report to this site and we'll automatically shut down that number. Question here is, how many millions of calls come out per day with this whole warrant?
And they have all kinds of different numbers, because I block numbers of spam calls all the time, and the same company keeps calling me back with a different number.
Exactly. On top of that, how many different things do you have to do, FCC? You have to check the television stations. You have to check the radio station. You have to check the internet constantly. Do you think you can add one more thing to that whole list and think you can get this done in a timely manner? Because I personally don't think so. I think this is a complete waste of your time, and as a taxpayer too, along with you, I think this is a waste of our taxpaying dollars as well to announce this kind of thing.
Well, you know, when cell phones first came out, it was supposed to be against the law to do any soliciting on a cell phone. That only lasted a year or two.
And on top of that, how many other scam calls are there? There's a lot of them that say, oh, we're the IRS and we're going to shut you down.
Oh, yeah.
What has the FCC done with that one? They've only announced so far this. Yeah, and if you file a report with them, how long is it going to take on top of that? Because, again, you're dealing with so much FCC.
Fortunately, my phone will sometimes say spam or possible spam, so I'll know to just ignore it. But
They never leave. They never
sometimes
leave.
It's just an unidentified number and you just don't know.
That's true. Yeah. I always pick up unknown numbers, but when it says spam, I will ignore it. I do appreciate my phone. I have AT&T. Do you have AT&T?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it's just an AT&T thing or T-Mobile as well as doing that sort of stuff or Verizon, but personally, I appreciate that part.
But then it was AT&T that canceled OAN. So there's one for them and one against them.
They were one of the very first networks to cancel them. Yes. But again, not surprised. I mean, it goes everything that AT&T stands for in the first place, I guess, in terms of like government policies and stuff like that. That's another story again entirely. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, so I don't have time to do a movie review.
Okay,
tonight.
We'll look forward to more of your movie reviews. I know you still want to get down that list of all the Christian films.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting. I have to leave everyone again on the edge of their seats for that one.
With bated breath as always. Okay, my friend, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.